Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. We are in March 2016, leaving the busy month of franchising with Franchise Expo South and the IFA convention in our rearview mirror. And, of course, joining me, as always, is my co-host, Stan Friedman. Stan, how are you today?
Paul, I am doing well. It is so good to be on the ground for more than a day or two at a time, trying to digest all the great things that came out of Franchise Expo South as well as the IFA convention, and actually have the time to process all of that and action all of that, and be on the ground to do it is something of a gift. And by the
way,
Paul,
I just wanted to talk about digesting. What do you do in front of one of these shows?
Well, and you just took my segue, and I was going to just jump right into that. And you know, we're starting to get like a couple that thinks and finishes sentences for each other, Paul. It's a little frightening,
yep. Actually.
the segue was, it's become a Wednesday ritual for me now that just ahead of showtime, I wind up calling Jimmy John's for my infamous number two, Big John. It arrives at about 20 to the hour, and right up to showtime, you and whoever our unfortunate guest is gets the opportunity to listen to me too. I think we ought to chase Jimmy John's, Paul, for a sponsorship.
I think so.
It's become part of the fabric of Franchise Today for me every Wednesday. So, you know, maybe we have a conversation with our friends at Jimmy John's. What do you think?
I think it's appropriate. Matter of fact, now that we have the documentation, I think we can go back and bill them for all the weeks that you already started the show.
Yeah, they'll probably want to give it to us in trade and bring me about 80 sandwiches or something. I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Yeah, probably not. Well, you know, Stan, as you said, it's good to be on the ground. Fortunately, this year, the events were here in Texas, so I didn't have to get up in a plane. But, you know, so many franchise executives and franchise professionals, suppliers, attorneys, obviously franchisors alike, even some franchisees, we're in the air in a very busy month, and everybody's kind of sitting down right now, going through all those emails, going through all those messages, trying to catch up. And it's good that you're on the ground for at least a few days. But knowing you, I'm sure you'll be right back up in the air pretty quick.
You know, interestingly enough, Shaq and I were talking yesterday, and she's been trying to follow up with some people that we met at the convention, and having a hard time finding a great many people back out on the road again. And some of them, more than just a few, she said, are heading off to their own brand conventions. So the season is not just for IFA's convention, but a great many franchisors are in the midst of their franchisee convention season as well. So it's just a busy time of year.
Absolutely. So why don't you give us a little bit of an update on the front of the house before we introduce today's guest?
Absolutely, and in honor of today's guest, who's a guy who's got nothing but positive things to contribute to the audience, I ripped nothing but positive news to share for the front of the house. And we gave a bit of a recap last week on the convention, but a couple of postscripts to convention, Paul. I saw in the IFA Insider this week that we graduated the largest class of CFEs this year, 167 franchise executives and professionals achieved CFE status during the convention, and I want to call out some names of some of my friends that I'm so proud to see that have completed CFE, and there's a trend in that not all of them are relative newcomers or newbies to franchising. Some of them are seasoned veterans, and you'll recognize some of their names. For example, IFA President and CEO Robert Crisante got his CFE and was walking across the stage collecting his award this year. How about Joe Lindenmeyer, one of my faves here in Atlanta, Gail Longmore-Jones, Peter Wright, Sean Manning, again, Robbie Crisante, industry veteran, franchise founder of multiple brands, David McKinnon. Congratulations to you, David. Mike Rotundo, CEO of Tropical Smoothie. Jack Humbert, longtime J.D. Byrider executive. John Draper, on my board with Paffy, got his CFE this year. Graham Chapman, our friend from 919 Marketing, and all the way from down under, a guy I've met and enjoyed knowing for the past several years through the Pro Athlete Franchise Initiative, makes the trip to IFA every year, no matter where it is. John Longmire from Black Dot Solutions Down Under in Australia walked the stage this year as well and collected his pin. So it's nice to see that some of us old dogs that have been at this for a while, year over year, in some cases we've been shamed into getting our pins. I can't tell you how many times I've been asked to teach a CFE course before I earned the pin and really started feeling guilty about teaching a course for credit that I don't even have the designation of what's being taught here. And, you know, that kind of worked on my head a little bit. And clearly, you know, for guys like Dave McKinnon, for all the things that he's contributed to franchising, all the successes that he's brought to franchising, still saw the value in earning the stripe. So I'm really proud to see that seasoned veterans are doing what leaders do. They're leading by example and inspiring others to follow in their tracks and to become smarter, brighter, and accredited with the CFE designation from IFA. So congratulations to all of this year's 167 franchise executives. High fives to each and every one of you. Also, Paul, one of my favorite people in franchising received a tremendous honor this year, and that was Doc Cohn. So during the IFA convention, the Franchise Education and Research Foundation, which is the new name for the IFA Educational Foundation, presented its William Rosenberg Foundation Leadership Award to Doc Cohn this year. And who better than Doc? Doc is so involved in the Educational Foundation's fundraising this year and in bringing bright lights to Next Gen, VetFran, DiversityFran, and Franchising Gives Back. And so Doc has not only taken the gavel as chairman and chief fundraiser, but has been bestowed the honor of being the William Rosenberg Foundation Leadership Award winner. And couldn't be prouder to share that with our audience, and prouder for Doc Cohn, who's a good friend of us and many in the audience. And then speaking of the Franchising Next Gen program, what a program was put on for us on Tuesday for the closing General Assembly with the young entrepreneurs competing in the FranShark event.
Mm-hmm.
And great program, and congratulations to the finalists. A $10,000 cash prize was awarded, and I hope that they do this program again next year. I think it's got legs, and as well as teeth. And I think it should be brought back. I think it's just a phenomenal opportunity for young entrepreneurs from all over the world to compete in this event and be judged by real-time franchise executives on center stage in front of an audience of their peers. There's no better opportunity for next-geners to enter the real world and compete in a program like the FranShark event. And I hope this was the first of many to come. A couple of other just quick notes, Paul, because this week it's all good news. I'm not sharing anything but good news this year. Melting Pot Restaurants, want to call them out. The Melting Pot has announced a total of nearly $600,000 raised during the 12th annual St. Jude Thanks and Giving campaign in support of St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. The company has raised almost $10 million for St. Jude's since establishing its partnership in 2003. And something the IFA has asked us to do this year, and Doc Cohn is the one who's really championing this, is help get the word out on all of these Franchise and Gives Back events. You know, we have the big event every year in front of convention, but all year long, franchise companies all over the globe are giving back to their local communities, and we just owe it to ourselves to help people in those local communities have the paradigm shift of learning that these are local businesses, might be wearing national brands, but it's your neighbors, it's your friends, it's the local business owners that are all giving back to the communities with things that they do. And in fact, in my conference room right now on the other side of the wall are a bunch of people from our parent company, ARC Systems, as well as FRM teammates that are working on a lunch program, filling up bags for an Atlanta charity called Church on the Street, helping the homeless here, and just a piece of what Franchising Gives Back is all about happening right now in real time as we're podcasting. So all this is just a lot of good stuff to talk about. And the last piece I'm going to leave you with before we introduce our guest, Paul, is during last week's convention on Tuesday, I'm in my booth, and a couple of my old friend executives from here in Atlanta walk up to me, Joe Lindenmeyer being one of them, and Tom Wood, president and CEO at Floor Coverings International, and said, Tom is on an advisory board at Kennesaw State University, and he told me about a program that KSU was putting together that they were extremely proud of, which is going to be seeing KSU's Entrepreneurship Center offering a course in entrepreneurship that this year will be a course that will only earn you a minor, but starting in 2017, the Board of Regents are taking under review the opportunity to make this course credited as a major, and it would be the only university in the country offering entrepreneurship as a major. So I was asked by Tom if I could help him in any way at all with anybody that I knew through IFA that might put a bright light on this program that he was coming home to on Friday morning from convention. And who better than our newly crowned chairman of IFA, Aziz Hashim, took the gavel on Tuesday at the convention. And on Tuesday afternoon, I asked if there was any chance on earth on short notice that he could speak at Kennesaw State on Friday. And Aziz came and made it his very first milestone as chairman of IFA, his first official act, his first official program. So I know he's always going to have KSU on his brain. But he spoke to a room of 150 advisors, business leaders, students, and the students just were most inspired by Aziz. Aziz couldn't get out of there after the program was over for the long line of people that wanted to just pick his brain for one more nugget before he left. So publicly, I want to take this opportunity to thank Aziz Hashim, who's got a very full plate this year ahead of him. We're going to be seeing him as our guest hopefully next week here on Franchise Today. But Aziz is going to make a big difference in his year serving as IFA's chairman, and he didn't wait but a day after landing in Atlanta to make Kennesaw State's entrepreneurship program the first stop on a long, long list of things that I know he's going to achieve for us in IFA this year. And that, Paul, is the front of the house.
You know, it's Aziz has got such an unbelievable schedule, and what a great gentleman and person that just has tremendous wisdom beyond his years. But right in the middle of it, his company, NRD Capital, goes ahead and buys a majority share in Fuzzy Tacos as if they don't have enough to do. And so my congratulations to Aziz and Susan Beth and the rest of the NRD Capital team.
It's kind of funny that while he was standing on stage, he kept looking at his watch. And he told it was Friday morning. He said he told the audience, I'm not looking at my watch because I have someplace to be. I'm looking at my watch because in 3 minutes there will be a press release going across the wire announcing our latest acquisition. And he was and even with all that going on, where was he but with us at KSU? So, well, can't thank you enough, Aziz Hashim. And I know that there's going to be great things happening this year with you at the helm.
Absolutely. And his message of becoming ambassadors for franchising has obviously resonated loud and clear. I just received an email from friend of the show, Deb Evans, who is spearheading the Women's Franchise Network here in Houston. And they have an event on March 22nd at one of our clients, which is Safeway Driving, at their new offices in Houston. And it's really talking about, you know, incoming IFA chairman, you know, Aziz Hashim, challenging the membership to become ambassadors for the business model as well as their own brand. And so that's the first of the events, and I'm sure there are going to be many more going throughout the country. So it really is a nice big breath of fresh air. We all need to do our part as ambassadors, and it's just a good time in franchising. It is a good time in franchising. You know, today's guest, Lonnie Helgerson, longtime franchise professional, was actually on Franchise Today 4 years ago yesterday as he was promoting his then just recently published book, Five Pennies, Ten Rules to Successfully Build a Franchise Mega Brand and Maximize System Profits. And in the book, it was a passage that really stuck out in my mind. And it said, every year, tens of thousands of new franchisees open their doors for business, and look to fulfill the American dream of success. And every year, hundreds of new franchise companies announce their plans to be the next McDonald's, Subway restaurants, Marriott, Remax, or Great Clips, and fail to reach that goal. Why? And I know it was the basis behind Lonnie's book. Lonnie, welcome back to Franchise Today.
Thank you, Paul. And Stan, it's really good to be back on the show. I can't believe it's been 4 years already. I'm sure I haven't aged a bit in that time frame, so I appreciate being back on again.
Yeah, I think 4 years ago you were, what, 28 years old? So, you know, you're still a young man.
Yeah, exactly. Well, always will be, right?
You know, we've been blessed with, you know, a lot of different guests with some big pedigrees within franchising, like yourself. And, of course, that pedigree always comes down to just a tremendous amount of experience within the brand and seeing ups and downs of different brands and trying to put together the things that franchisors and franchisees alike can latch onto. And I think Five Pennies was a testament to that. But before we get into Five Pennies and taking a deeper dive from where we were 4 years ago, let's talk just a little bit, because our listening audience, you know, continues to evolve too. And they're probably sitting here saying, who the heck is Lonnie Helgerson? So why don't you just give us a little bit of an overview of some of your background so that our listening audience today has an understanding of the type of experience that you're bringing to the table that is obviously very well documented in this great book.
Sure, love to. Before I begin, I'd like to give a shout out to Aziz for taking the helm of the IFA chair. Extremely excited by what his leadership capabilities will bring to the IFA and his direction for that. So Aziz, excited to have you out there, and you're going to do an awesome job. So congratulations. But moving on to me, I've been in the gig for a long time. You know, I guess I got a few gray hairs, as they call us, and probably, you know, it's been better than 30 years I've been in franchising at some level. Started my career back in the day in the 80s, and I don't want to date myself too much here, being I'm 28. But back in the 80s, I started with a little chain called Super 8 Motels at the time, where we had a couple hundred units. We founded it and based it out of Aberdeen, South Dakota, and out on the prairie. And by the time we hit about 1,200 units with that chain, they decided to sell the brand. And I moved on and started a company or a franchise brand of my own called Computer Doctor at the time. And at that time, we were cutting edge with computer technology services. There were no players in that space. Computers themselves were just a new, you know, relatively new concept, desktops and laptops. And most businesses at the time really didn't either have them or understand how they could apply them in their own business and that type of thing. And we grew that company quite rapidly and very well. And as you know, with technology, if it's like bananas, if it's on the shelf more than 3 days, it's no good. And we were hit with a lot of different things that came down the pike during that time, including Y2K and so on and so forth. And we ultimately evolved that company into a brand called Expatech Technology Services, which focuses primarily on commercial at the time. And today they're still running strong with Expatech, still based out of South Dakota, and you know, focus on commercial, managing commercial systems, managed services, and that type of thing. Very proud to have been a part of that company and where they're at. And in 2005, I exited out of that brand and moved to Florida with my family and worked with a number of companies down there, including Identikit out of St. Petersburg. I ran that company as a CEO for better than 3 years and grew that quite well, doing very well, and have been involved with a large number of other brands. I've also, in addition to Computer Doctor and Expatech, have helped some other companies that start a franchise, if you will. A few years back, as an operating partner, I helped assemble a team that put together a a company that focused on the veteran side during the time. I was also been involved with a lot of IFA programs, which we'll touch on in a bit, but I was two-time chairman of the International Franchise Association VetFran program, was on the founding committee with that. And we, I worked with a company out of Ohio to put together a consultancy, if you will, or a brokerage to assist veterans to get into franchise ownership of their own. And but that, you know, tied in well with what VetFran was doing. I've also helped many other brands in the convenience store space and many others as far as helping them with their development needs and operations primarily, and understanding how the overall, you know, holistic approach to a franchise brand comes together and should gel together. And in addition to that, I also own a company called Island Time Treasures, which we've got 13 locations. Soon they add a few more. We're looking to grow that by another 10 locations or more this year. Nice methodical growth with it, and it's been doing quite well. That brand specializes in the child education space, or what we call edutainment space. And we provide birthday parties and after-school programs and that type of thing with Island Time Treasures. But in the last few years, I've been spending quite a bit of time consulting with franchise companies of all different sizes, whether some of them have been startups, others have been very large with thousands of locations. And then I've also had a few suppliers that have contacted me that want to understand the franchising space and how to properly approach it and that type of thing. But most of all of that has been really revolving around Five Pennies. As you said, I wrote that 4 years ago, wrote the book, not so much on how to franchise a business, but really you go to the IFA convention and other meetings and conferences, and you hear about development, or you hear about unit profitability, and you hear about education and phases of brand growth and all of these different things, and nobody had really taken and put all of these items together in a methodical approach to look at a brand and almost like a quality assurance checklist to say, okay, if I'm going to have a strong, sustainable company that's focused on unit economics, what are the pieces of that and how do they pull together? And so in the last few years, I've been focused helping quite a few companies do that. And here we are.
Hey, you know, Lonnie, I think you and I met when you were, my earliest memory of knowing you was Identikids, but listening to you review your life's career and your life's work, it appears that we both had a bit of nexus more than once in our careers, and that around the turn of the century in Y2K, when you were doing what you were doing for Computer Doctor, I was with a company traveling around the world putting out fires for what was the predecessor to WSI, which is a great company today, but it was called World Sites back then. And mm-hmm. a lot of what we went through in the computer world with franchising, it was moving so quick and changing so fast that we wound up with different versions. I mean, people that were trained on the second Tuesday of January were learning things that didn't even exist the month before, and people who were coming to training the following month were learning things that didn't exist in January. I mean, things were coming at the speed of light. Did you find that on the repair side of the business as well, or was it just us more on the software side?
Oh, my gosh, no. We dealt with the same situation. You know, the advancement of technology, including software and today mobile technology and apps, is just mind-boggling. There's really no way to wrap your arms around it and really totally understand it, even if you're in it full-time, right? So
right.
We definitely faced some challenges with that, as a great deal of companies did at that time. I mean, when computers back then dropped sub 1,000, if you remember, and some of the younger generation online will even wonder what we're talking about. But when those computer prices dropped below $1,000, that shook up everything. That changed everything, because now it became commoditized. And the more that you had technicians that realized there was this huge market out there because Silicon Valley is starting to thrive and drive a lot of this, and we had the dot-com companies growing. The market became flooded not only with technology, but also with people. And these people had a tremendous amount of technology skills at one thing or another, and it commoditized the whole thing.
Right.
And once you hit a commodity, you're kind of in trouble, right? Because then it's price-driven. So,
it becomes dot-com becomes dot-bomb, and then most of them become dot-gone.
Exactly.
And so it went. But, Lonnie, you know, you've laid out a tremendous amount of credential in the introduction and laying the foundation for your life's work in franchising. Pretty much establishes why you've got so much to share and had probably been inspired to write that book in the first place. My question before Paul dives into some deeper questions about the book is the title of the book. What inspired the title Five Pennies?
The title was inspired by the average amount of royalty that a chain is charging for a royalty stream. And it really revolves around that royalty. And what does that royalty mean to people, Stan? I mean, it's interesting. You see these new companies and they just arbitrarily pick a number, whether it's their franchise fee they're going to charge or their royalty, without really understanding the implications of that royalty on a franchisee's profitability. Because at the end of the day, that 3% or that 5% or whatever number it is has to come out of a franchisee's cash flow, no matter how you slice it. And that was the essence of why I wrote the book, because without the profitability there at a franchisee unit level to create that 5 cents, not only for the five franchisor, but the profits for them in addition to that, then the entire business model doesn't work. And so that's why I call it Five Pennies.
Makes nothing but sense to me.
Yeah, a lot of sense. What I love about the book is the fact that, you know, it's not a book about, you know, turning your business into a franchise. It's really building your franchise into a sustainable brand, which, of course, is all that franchise today is about. You know, before I go on and ask you some questions to take a deeper dive into the book, you know, you guys were mentioning, you know, Y2K, and then I was thinking about the Next Gen program and a lot of those people that were there in their early 20s and might not even be aware of what Y2K was because they might have been 4, 6, 7 years old at the time. And it just made me feel very old there for a second, guys, that we were talking about Y2K. And to us, it felt like yesterday. But you know what? It was 16 years ago.
Can you believe that?
Hard to believe.
I know.
Hard to believe.
I know.
Hard to believe. So, you know, we know the basis of Five Pennies, and I think the key behind this is the 10 rules to successfully build a franchise mega brand and maximize system profits. And, of course, we know that the franchise relationship, in order to be able to achieve sustainability as a brand, has to be a strong interdependent relationships. Why don't you give us a little bit of insight, Lonnie, into, you know, the various rules, how you started come up with that. We'll then have to go to a short break for promo, and then we can take an even deeper dive as we come out of the break.
Okay, you bet. Well, you know, we always talk about unit economics, and, you know, speaking of the Y2K and then our rapid move towards the recession that we all went through as companies, not too far in the distant past, really drove a point home with franchisors and store operators that, you know, the profitability of the unit is paramount, because those that weren't profitable, unfortunately, were swept under the rug or went away. And those franchisors that really emerged from that recession, that focused on that, became much, much stronger companies. But at the same time, that's, you know, the franchisee profitability. And you mentioned earlier, Stan, about Franchising Gives Back, which is an awesome program. And that, you know, the franchisees in our local communities, everything is local. And I've always said that. It's all marketing, all operations are local in nature. But if a franchisee can't get into a unit of some kind, whether it be QSR or services, it doesn't matter – and make a sustainable living at it, there's no way that they can afford to give back to the community and be involved with that. And so it is really about being local. But that's just the beginning. You know, there's, you know, coming up with a formulation for this book, and I kept it at, you know, I wanted to have something that was fairly easy to digest, and I looked at a brand and said, these are the 10, at the beginning, 10 core highlights of a brand that really create a solid system. And it begins with, you know, rule number one, which is really revolves around unit profitability and understanding the five pennies and protecting the five pennies in that store. And I think that's a key part of it. It isn't just collecting royalties. I think it's about protecting your royalty stream. And you do that by, you know, continuing to assist your franchisee. You know, the second rule was about is about the relationship side of this. We have the contractual relationship, obviously, but it's unfortunate too many companies kind of jump to that before they look at the operational day-to-day relationships. And rule number two was about fostering and developing deeper relationships with your owners and how to include them in the system and help them help you become a stronger mega brand, which in the case of this book, mega is not large. Mega is great, and that was a term that I wanted to point out. The third point is really about building your system in a smart way. So many companies get focused on multi-unit deals or area representation and want to blow this thing out on a national level. And, you know, the bottom line is, that'll catch up to you if you haven't designed that in a very methodical approach that is makes sense with what your unit is all about. That can be very dangerous thing. So building out your system in a smart way, stay ahead of your growth, and it takes time. You know, it's a race of endurance. It's not a drag race, and that's the point of rule number three. The fourth one is about franchise education experience. And Stan, you were giving shout outs to all these people that we know, and it's an awesome, you know, CFE designation is a program that I served on the ICFE Board of Governors for many years. And I can't say enough about that. I can't say enough about franchise education or having that experience in your company. And so often we see these small franchise brands that are afraid to approach guys like Dave McKinnon or myself or Stan or you, Paul, and others to bring that experience in because they're afraid we're going to charge them an arm and a leg. But you know what? In many cases, we're there just to offer help in any way we can. But at the same time, that system, regardless of how small or large they need to be, needs to focus on becoming smarter at franchising. The fifth one rule in the book is about cultivating best practices and bringing those ideas and how to harness those ideas and make a stronger system by that. The sixth rule is about
hold that thought right there, Lonnie, because it's only appropriate that you made it halfway through the 10 rules at the halfway point in the program, and I'm going to do okay. That halfway break that Paul spoke about, and then you can bring us back around for 6 through 10. This is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman along with Paul Segretto, and we're speaking today with author, serial entrepreneur, franchise executive, founder, CEO, Lonnie Helgerson. Franchise Today is brought to you by the Franchise Foundry, Paul Segretto's business accelerator, where he helps early stage systems stand up and emerging franchise brands grow up as they scale their brands for sustainable growth. Franchising Today is also brought to you by FRM Solutions, where we offer robust, out-of-the-box CRM and content management software solutions, all tailored specifically for franchising, to assist with the management of relationships between franchisors and both their prospective and existing franchisees. So, Lonnie, between you, me, and Paul, we've probably reinvented ourselves more than the nine lives that God bestows to a cat. But for as long as I've known you, which I think goes back to that identikit, as I said earlier, I don't think I knew or at least remembered your history with Super 8, which later earlier in my career, I was involved with a company that you probably sold Super 8 to. So there's another touch point in our lives in that 2.5 degrees of separation. So I worked for HFS Incendant, but on the real estate side of what was major hotel business, where they were acquiring all kinds of brands like Super 8. And in fact, I worked for a gentleman who became the president of ERA Franchise Systems, coming to ERA from having served as the president of, guess who? Super 8.
There you have it. Small world, isn't
it? Can't make it up. But we're at a poignant point where you've gotten through the top five, and we're going to come back and dive more into some of these. So let's go through 6 through 10, and then, Paul,
sure,
you can pick it up from there.
Sounds good.
All right. Number 6 is about finding the right, and I would say finding and recruiting the right franchise owners, because at the, you know, at the core of the business of the unit profitability is having those right franchise owners in those units and growing the system. The 7th one focuses on what I call unit and national marketing. In other words, where the rubber hits the road is, what is the franchisor doing to drive sales at the unit level? So often we focus on national marketing initiatives, but what are we doing at the unit level? What are we doing at the street level to provide programs and assist those franchisees and making that cash register ring? That's a key part. The 8th one is about creating partnerships. This is more of a macro level look at your system. And speaking of Super 8, we did a couple things that were very incredible at the time back in the 80s, early 80s, late 70s, with the VIP program, which was a loyalty program at the time, which is way ahead of its time, and also our in-house reservation system. Those were macro level programs that drove a tremendous amount of value and revenue to our franchisees. So what is a chain doing to create partnerships? What type of national accounts do they have in place? What type of programs do they, you know, for example, you mentioned St. Jude earlier, with the Melting Pot folks, and very proud of those guys and what they've contributed to that. But that's a great example of a macro program that fits into this topic. What are they doing to bring that brand forward? And then number 9 is really about system technology. We've been talking about technology and computers, and today is, how do you manage that system? What are the KPIs? How do you gather all of this data and aggregate it and make sense of it, share with your owners, and help them and you grow the system? And then finally, the last one, number 10, and perhaps this should be number 1 in some cases, is really about, what are the phases of a brand, you know, when they go from 0 units to 50 and so on and so forth, and phases of that brand. But what are the financial requirements it takes to grow a brand, not only when you start it, which today is incredibly expensive, by the way, but what happens when you hit 30 to 50 units and you are growing fairly quickly and you're having cash flow problems, and what does that look like? So where do you need to be for managing that system ongoing as you grow, and what it takes to succeed? And that's the, you know, a summary of the 10 chapters in the book, which really, you know, give a good foundation to a strong brand.
And certainly we appreciate that. I felt like it was an extended version of the David Letterman top 10, which I think is always great. You know, Lonnie, as you and Stan were going back and forth about, you know, when you two first might have crossed paths, I think we remember the first time we crossed paths, and it was when Deb Evans, then the president and CEO of Computer Explorers, had a regular, I think it was a monthly, like a CEO call, and I was invited into it, and you were on the call. And I remember shortly afterwards, and of course, at that time, I was diving very deep into the early stages of social media. And you called me and you said, I'd like to have you on a panel at the IFA convention, which at that point was going to be in San Diego. And I said, well, I think there's a potential problem, because although I've been an IFA member on the franchisor side for so long, I really hadn't become a member at that point in the IFA as a supplier. And I remember your exact words. You said, well, heck, they got Bill Clinton speaking, and he's not an IFA member. So I remember we chuckled about that, and I said, "Yeah, I don't even charge as much as President Clinton does at that point." So
yeah,
anyway,
and the good news, Paul, is he still isn't.
Yeah,
exactly.
Interesting. Well, you know, one of the things amongst many that really stands out in my mind as I read through your book, and quite frankly, have used it as a handbook of my own, as I consult with a lot of different franchise companies as well, was the tools to improve franchise relations. Because I honestly believe franchise relations, even to this day, doesn't have enough attention. I mean, if you go to the summits at the IFA convention, you have technology and marketing standing room only. You can't get in there. International is quite robust. Franchise development's robust. And you get to franchise relations, and there's empty seats. And to me, it should be one of the ones that should be one of the most crowded. So in the book, you talk about some tools to improve franchisee relations. And many franchisors, especially of the emerging type, and the ones that are just getting started, you know, say, well, how much, you know, could I actually do? And you have a list of franchisee system engagement programs that is far-reaching, and a list of franchisee communication tools that are far-reaching. And what I would like you to do is to explain some of your thoughts behind that, because there's even a point beyond those two charts in your book where you say, does this mean I have to learn how to sing Kumbaya? And every time I read that, I laugh, because a lot of new franchisors say, you know, do I just have to, you know, get them to drink the Kool-Aid? And it's obviously a lot more than that. So if you would expand upon engagement and communication, I'd really appreciate it.
I'd love to. You know, I've been blessed to be able to work with a lot of companies, and I've got a number of clients I'm working with right now. And there's about three or four things that really pop up on your radar when you're talking to fairly new franchisors, as you mentioned, Paul. And you know, there's some obvious ones. One is their manuals always need to be tightened up. Two, their recruiting processes need to be tightened up and or developed, and understanding their profile. Third is their internal operations and how they're approaching. But franchisee relations is probably number three or number four on that list at all times. And understanding how to work with a franchisee, because I have a client right now, and they've got a flourishing system. They're fairly new at franchising, and that's one of the topics that we've talked about a great deal, is how do you create programs, and at what depth do you do that, and more importantly, when do you do that? Because if you're a brand that's only got two or three locations, one or two franchisees, it's hard to do. But as I've explained to them, and anyone else has asked this question, it really becomes the kumbaya comment in that book really comes down to, how do you balance the relationship with compliance? Because it's much like parenting. You say you have your children as you parent them, and you can be a friend to your children, but you also have to be a parent as well. And how do you balance the good and the bad of that? And you know, getting them involved to understand, from all of the tools that I put in that book, to understand how to drive the business. I'll use Identikit as an example. When I was with that system and I first started running it as a CEO, I took a cross section of franchisees from the system, single unit, multi unit, people had been in 25 years, people had been in 2 months. And we brought a whole bunch of franchise owners together, and we all took our hats and badges off and titles and looked at each other and said, okay, here's the deal. What do we want this thing to look like when we grow up? And we came out flush with ideas, pages and reams of pages of ideas. Much of it was crazy stuff that we threw out there, which is the fun part. But out of that, we distilled down two or three major items that really needed attention. And through having them assist us, and we brought that forward, the buy-in of the system, so it was so much stronger, because now it was a committee that was together. And when we did it, we said, you know, when we brought the programs forward, we said, you know what, here's what you guys want, here's what we want, now here's what we can do. And that's the part where the kumbaya comment comes in, is what can you really do, you know? And but if you've included people with that, Paul, they get it. I mean, they understand that they have asked for the moon, but just like your kids, if you will, they know they're going to only get one of the 15 cookies in there versus the whole, you know, the whole jar. So that's what that means. So I hope that answers your question a bit.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the book is full of neat charts. And I say that because it's easy reference, and people's, you know, busy time, they don't always have the time to go and read word for word. And as important as it is to understand everything in the book, really, if you've got a little bit of experience in franchising, if you just referred to the charts, I think you can make a world of difference in your organization. And one that really struck me, I mean, they've all struck me as great. There's one about best practices, communication, and education channels. But the one that really gets me as being absolutely essential in running an organization is the Franchisee Unit Profitability Tools Guide. And I like where you have the tool, you have what it does, but more importantly, you have the 10 rules, you know, the specific rules that applies to that. And I think that's such an easy reference. And I certainly appreciate that and would recommend people to look at that. But, you know, Lonnie, this all comes down to, you know, one key word. And I think it gets diminished a lot. I think it gets misunderstood a lot. I think it gets stepped on a lot. And that word, of course, is culture. And it stems into, mm-hmm. you know, creating that right culture. And in your book, you have a quote that says, to change any culture in any company, the people at the top have to show it, because words without deeds mean nothing. And that's
nothing.
Hugely yep. powerful.
Yeah, culture is, you know, let me put it to you this way, and you guys know me, and so many listeners do. Not much filter with me. Running a brand is damn hard. I mean, it's building a franchise company is not for the faint of heart. It takes commitment. It takes every fiber of your body to create it, and to get into a situation where you're starting to envelop others to love your brand and bring that brand culture. You get a lot of emotion involved with this, especially for these new franchisors or first brand. It's like birthing, and it's incredibly difficult to let go of those things that are that you think are important, but it you know, really may not be as important as they do. And the only way that would be known is for some seasoned guy like us to step in and say, well, today that's important, but believe me, in 5 years it isn't going to mean anything, or when you got 300 units. And to create a culture of embracing franchisees isn't for everyone, and not everyone can do it. And I think if management that are starting a brand, or even if they've got a 1,000 or 3,000 units, understands that they've got some type of culture problem or franchisee problem in their system, they really need to take a look and say, what am I doing at the top to promote this or change this? And if they're not, then their system is going to continue down a path and get worse to the point where it may be irreparable. So,
Lonnie, who in your view, when you wrote this book, who were you thinking about? Who were you hoping for as a primary reader? Whose eyes did you want to place this book in front of to benefit from most?
Primarily, Stan, it was management. I have about three customers, really, if you will, who anybody in franchising should read the book, and that includes franchisees, because it'll help them understand what it takes to build a system. But management is where it starts. The people and I'm talking not only just senior, but middle management, department heads, director level, anyone that's engaged with franchisees on a daily basis needs to read this. And the 10 rules, the 10 pieces at the base of this, Stan, are only the beginning. You know, I've got a program that I've been working with companies here in the last year or two. Is I've got a what I call a 25 core assessment, which takes these 10 rules and dives into 25 deep core areas of a brand that include everything from quality assurance to technology and all of those things, to really create a roadmap of all of the things that they're looking at, that they should address, where their weak points are. It's like a massive SWOT analysis, strength and weakness analysis.
Awesome.
But only on a macro level.
Well, before I give it back to Paul to close us out, Lonnie, because this hour just flew, I'm going to make a suggestion to you that I believe your book has multiple audiences, as do you, and I'm going to add a fourth layer to it, and I'm going to expound on one. When you talked about management, I think that management of emerging and companies like Paul Helps that are just starting to stand up can learn a lot from this book before they have to go make mistakes that they don't need to make because perhaps their eye's not on the right ball. I would also suggest to you that senior management of legacy companies, brands that have been out there for a while, ought to give this book a read and then have a look at their FTDs and see if there's a gap between the two that you could drive a truck through or not. It might
absolutely
become something of a reality check for senior management that are up in a C-suite, you know, steps of management removed from the front line where the rubber is meeting the road, and give themselves a reality check. Absolutely agree with you about franchisees, and then I'm going to tell you that a few weeks ago in Houston, when Rebecca Monet joined me to teach the A to Z's of buying a franchise, we shouted out a couple of book titles to the audience of prospective franchisees and suggested that it would be a real education for them before even getting into the space, as they're interviewing companies that are interviewing them as prospects, to have this as a foundation of understanding what should be coming your way, what should be available with the companies that you're with, and what a primer and what a great tool Five Penny's become. And that was Rebecca's vision. She said, Lonnie's book would be perfect, and I didn't get it at first, but I sure get it now.
Thank you, Rebecca. Shout out to her. You know, and that's true, Stan, because, you know, a prospective franchisee is just a babe in the woods. You know, they're looking at this, and they're getting that Kool-Aid from that prospective brand. But to have that tool to say, okay, these are the things I need to identify with this company, and if they don't have them, are they going to have them, and that type of thing, is absolutely, you know, essential. So,
or am I in the wrong place?
Yeah, no kidding. Yep.
You know,
so,
Lonnie,
absolutely.
To me, there's another key part of the book that sums it up, because there are, especially on the emerging brands, which we know is a target audience, and so many don't understand the formality of franchising. And if you don't understand the formality of franchising, you certainly don't understand the formality of an interdependent relationship. And towards the end of the book, it says, I'll never forget a conversation I had with a guy that was considering creating a new franchise concept. I was telling him about franchise company's infrastructure concerning legal, staff, capital, field support, training, length of time to create, and so forth. And he stopped me mid-sentence and said, really? I didn't realize that a franchise was like a real company and needed all that. I just thought you could put up a website and start selling franchises. And
true story.
All too many do that. But, yeah, I imagine it is, because I run into that every single week.
It's just another testament to the fact that there needs to be managed expectations on the part of one and all, not just the prospect or the franchisor, but both.
But, you know, I think this is a great tie-in to what we started at the beginning of today's show, Stan, which was Aziz Hashim's message about being ambassadors of franchising. You know, we as franchise professionals and as an industry need to be promoting more and more about franchising so that people don't have this misperception out there that franchising is anything but, you know, a real business. So it's very important. I mean, you know, as you guys know, I've been very, very vocal with American Express and Small Business Saturday and tired of franchising being disrespected and not being considered as the key component or the key cornerstone to small business. And we saw some of the same things take place in various government groups that were looking to pass laws and absolutely weigh initially on franchising ahead of the mom and pops. I think this is all part of what we need to do as ambassadors of franchising.
I'll take it a step further, Paul, and I don't think we can scream it loud enough. We've given Aziz almost as much airtime today as we have Lonnie. but the truth is that if Aziz said anything that resonated with me and stuck with me as he accepted the gavel from Melanie Bergeron, it was that the number one enemy of franchising today is not government. It's not Republicans or Democrats. It's not regulation. It's not legislation. It's ignorance. And and if you don't fill the gap that's left by ignorance, then SEIU and NLRB and others will. So it is incumbent upon all of us to help people have a paradigm shift about what franchising really is and what it is and what it isn't. And who better than the frontline foot soldiers that are living the dream every day, who better than them to make certain that we do our role in sharing what franchising is all about with everyone that we can, so that that paradigm does shift and people can respect this business model that contributes so much in wealth and treasure to the economy, instead of fighting the battles of regulation and government intervention.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. Well, Lonnie, it's amazing how fast an hour flies by, and it's also amazing how fast 4 years flies by, so we certainly want to have you back on the show in a much quicker period of time, at least by the time you're 36 years old. I know you're busy, like we all are, but I really appreciate the time that you've taken to be with us today live, and a great bit of information. Again, the Lonnie book is 5 Pennies, 10 Rules to Successfully Build a Franchise Mega Brand and Maximize System Profit. Thank you again, Lonnie.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate you being on the show, and we'll do it again sometime.
Look forward to it, Lonnie. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, Stan, another riveting hour flies by, and I guess we'll be getting some confirmation of when Aziz will be coming on the show. So I look forward to being able to make that announcement as soon as you hear from his team on that.
And Paul, if we keep it up, you know, finishing each other's sentences the way we are, we're going to be able to get rid of our smartphones and stop texting each other backstage so that we're coordinating our efforts. We're just going to be able to think alike and know exactly whose turn it is to talk.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Stan, thank you. Thanks again to Lonnie. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.